And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tokini. Our very special guest today is Michael Humphreys. And if you don't know about Michael Humphreys, you're in for a treat today. His online gallery is michaelhumphreys.net. He's known mostly for his nostalgic country landscapes, dramatic seascapes, but I can tell you he is a lot more. He creates distinctive and professional visuals for the entertainment industry, always seeking a fresh approach to visual development, art direction, and production design. And I was talking to Michael in the pre-show just about mentoring many young artists that are out there. So, Michael, welcome to Legends, and I know that you'll be able to pass on some wisdom today to our listening audience. Welcome, sir.
So thank you for inviting me in. I'm always happy to talk to everyone about the art or the art business, all of that combined.
Yeah, it's great. You are quite the success. And I would also say up front that you've moved way beyond success to significance. I was reading through this morning all the various projects and initiatives that you've worked on. So I'd like for you to fill in the gaps for us on your bio, just to tell us about your experience at Disney and other places of note.
Okay. Well, I started out like most artists or at least students wanting to be artists. And I attended Art Center College of Design here in Pasadena, California. And that's where I've been a professor there for almost 15 years now. So I have a lot of students every year. And the last, I think this is the fourth term I'll be teaching on Zoom because of the pandemic, but it's actually turned out quite interesting. But I started out as a student at Art Center College of Design, and Disney Studios hired me directly from school, actually before I even graduated. So I was anxious to become part of the art team at Disney Studios. And the very first movie I worked on was the original Rescuers movie as a apprentice artist for Disney. But I continued on doing a lot of the different movies, working on Louis, Great Mouse Detective, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Lion King, Fantasia 2000. And I think the last movie I worked on was Princess and the Frog for them. But I'm still continuing with Disney. I work for Consumer Products, now Disney Fine Art, which is a division of Disney Consumer Products. And so now I do a lot of paintings for them, which they sell through galleries all around the country that carry Disney artwork. And also they make a lot of the prints of my paintings and sell at the parks as well. So just finished up one for Disney World. I just finished doing the Haunted House painting for Disney World. Which is going to be a print for their 50th anniversary of Disney World. So I do a variety of things. You know, I not only film, but, you know, I also have been doing calendars for 24 years, 25 years. Mm. And so that gives me a chance to expand into more fine art, more personal art, things that I like to do outside of the film industry. But also worked a lot in television, worked at Hanna-Barbera Studios for years, at Film Roman Studios, that done stuff for Warner Brothers, I've done stuff for almost most studios around town. I production designed Sony Pictures' very first animated movie called Open Season. And so I've just, you know, been around the block a while, doing this for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy it now mostly as an instructor, but also doing a lot of freelance for Disney still. And other studios as well.
Very good. What a great career that you are on. And how would you describe the Disney culture, and how has it positively influenced you as an artist?
Well, I grew up on Disney, like most kids, probably older than most out there. But I grew up on the Mickey Mouse Club and watching a lot of the Disney things, and grew up in Florida. And never imagined that I would actually end up working for Disney, working on the movies and the television shows as well. And so it's been a great honor to do that, as well as just a really fun career, just because it was so much of my childhood and continues to be. I also worked at Disneyland, which most people don't know. I started out doing caricatures and watercolor portraits and even silhouettes at Disneyland.
Oh, wow.
He managed the artists there for about 4 or 5 years. And in fact, I was still doing caricatures at the park when Disney hired me at the studio. And so that worked for a while. But then Disneyland made me choose between one or the other. They said it was a conflict of interest to work at the studio as well as the park. Mm. And I said, well, I quit the park. So I did. And haven't looked back. So I had a great time at Disneyland, though. I did sometimes 300 or 400 caricatures a day. So it was great. The drawing experience kept me drawing all the time. And I've done, I remember doing a couple celebrity caricatures. I did Paul Newman one time at a private party to caricature him.
Wow.
Different celebrities I've done over the years as well. Just my chance. Some at Disneyland as well. It's always been fun for me. So I've never thought of my job so much as work, except for the deadlines. Of course, the deadlines are always a challenge, no matter what medium you're working in, if you're working professionally. But I've always kind of balanced between commercial art and fine art. You know, growing up, I was doing watercolors and oil paintings the time I was 12 years old. And got my first job as a portrait artist when I was 16 years old at Knott's Berry Farm here in Southern California.
Oh, my goodness.
So I've been, and I was, I think, a junior in high school at that time. So I knew it was going to be my career. So I just kept pursuing it, and I'm still doing it.
Mm.
That was great. Now I get to give back a lot for the students as well at the college. So I've been doing that for, as I said, almost 15 years now.
Yeah, we respect this so much. Thank you for that. I think today's show is in part a give back also. I don't think our listening audience, I don't fully understand the magic and the DNA behind Disney outside of what we've read and what we see from your beautiful work. Tell us your perspective on how artwork and your work and your colleagues really makes for a magical story. And let's isolate it down to the Lion King and in what you and your colleagues did to really make that one of the most memorable Disney feature animations ever.
Okay, on The Lion King, I was a background painter and doing a little bit of visual development artwork, which is the pre-production artwork prior to doing final artwork for the movie. So it's a combination of things. It was Roger Allers and Rob Minkoff were the directors. And I worked with Roger actually on 3 different projects. I worked with him doing a little, I did 3 Fantasia shorts, one for Fantasia 2000 and 2 others after that. They were going to do a continuation of Fantasia, but they decided not to. But I already had done 2 short films to be included in that if they had continued. One of them was called The Little Match Girl, which Roger Allers also was my director on that. But on The Lion King, everything always starts with story. And that's the real magic of Disney, is the story. You know, nothing, all the visuals in the world can't help a bad story. So they spend an enormous amount of time working the story and reworking the story and reworking the story until they think it's greenlit. I've seen movies in pre-production for years that were dropped because the story wasn't right. Frozen's a good example of that. That started as the Snow Queen back in the 40s. And when I was at Disney, I saw 2 or 3 different versions trying to get greenlit to go move forward with that movie. And it wasn't until much later that they finally got the right story and called it Frozen instead of Snow Queen, and became, of course, as you know, big, big hit. Mm-hmm. But it's all about story. If Disney doesn't feel the story is right, is really creating that not only the Disney magic, but the Disney message to everyone, then they don't move forward with it. And so there's several movies in pre-production all the time, but only a few get greenlit to move forward. And it always goes back to really creating a great story. And then, of course, we have the top artists in the world working on the movies. So,
yep.
Not to brag, but I include myself in that as well.
You should.
Creating the imagery to back up the story.
Yep.
And that's the way it goes. So we start pre-production. Sometimes pre-production goes as much as 2 or 3, 4 years before they even start production on the movie. They do a lot of research. We do a lot of research. The directors, the art directors, and the, even the producers usually go and spend sometimes to 2 or 3 weeks on location for every movie trying to get enough reference material. A good example is Lion King, actually. That movie, of course, took place in Africa, so they spent a lot of time in Africa taking photographs and experiencing the locations and then bringing all that back to us. We all don't get to go on those trips, but it's always the director, the art directors, production designers, people like that, that do that. They come back with a lot of reference material, and from that, we start creating the imagery to support the story. And we move forward a little at a time until everything is right. And then just once it gets into production, of course, it kind of carries its own weight in a lot of respects. There's always changes. There's always, you know, pluses and minuses and things like that. And little hiccups along the way, of course. But for the most part, they all go pretty smoothly. In the older days, back during, you know, like Robin Hood and Great Mouse Detective and Rescuers, the original Rescuers, you know, it'd take 4 years to do a movie. And because of the digital age, of course, it's down to about two and a half years now. That's been, you know, because you can do a lot more digitally quicker than you can traditionally. I enjoy the traditional part, of course. Everything I work on now is pretty much in Photoshop for film. But in the old days, including Lion King, all those were painted on in acrylic paint on illustration board. And the backgrounds, I don't remember exactly how many were in that particular movie, but I would guess around 1,800 paintings per movie, something like that. I can go into those. And the animation, of course, is what most of the magic comes from that, because we have tremendous animators that really are great actors that are able to create the movements and the magic and the movements of the characters to match the story and the emotions of the story. And of course, as an art director and background artist, I'm more involved with the color end of things and the visuals. You know, what's the environment going to look like? What kind of trees do they have to support the locations? What kind of environment? What time of day is it? All these kinds of things fall into what I do mostly. But all this is everything, and doing backgrounds is all to support the story and the characters and all of that.
You bet.
So it's a complex thing. It's nothing that is taken lightly, and it takes a long time. And as you know, Disney has been so successful with animation. They spend a lot of time and attention to detail. And I think that's what really carries it over the weight of other studios, that they're able to create all that. They have the money and the support and the artist to really create some just beautiful artwork.
I think that's fascinating what you just said. And it makes me think about, Michael, that you and Roger must have been in sync together and must have understood the story deeply in order for you to produce what he was seeking.
Oh, absolutely. It goes through, you know, not only writing scripts and things of that nature, but most of the story really evolves through storyboarding.
Mm-hmm.
So a little, which are like almost like a comic book, these little tiny drawings, mm-hmm. you know, to create things. And they would just post these daily and throw out more than they kept. But it was always the directors and the producers and people in on that. That had Jeffrey Katzenberg was one of the people involved with that, of course, as one of the producers on that. But the story just evolves mostly from doing little sketches and little drawings and little gags and things of this, and then it all kind of just comes together at some point. But a lot of it gets thrown out. You'd be surprised how much gets thrown out before it really is considered good enough for Disney and good enough to move forward with.
Mm.
So it's an interesting process. I also did illustrated the Lion King children's book, and I was doing that at the same time I was working on the movie, because they wanted the children's book out on the shelves before the movie came out, so it would already be there. So I remember going back as I was doing the illustrations and the background opinions for the movie, I would have to go in and talk to Roger about what's coming up next in terms of the story. So so I could make sure that the book was going to evolve the same way as the movie would. And with that, another animator friend of mine, Marshall Tierney, he and I were invited to go to the Smithsonian Institute, and we gave a presentation and a book signing and all that. He worked on the book as well, doing the sketches, and then I did the paintings. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun to have a really great audience too. And we had clips from the movie, a lot of the pre-production clips of the wildebeest stampede and things like that.
Yes.
Were really exciting for the audience to see as pencil sketches before it ever became a final film. So it's a lot of fun, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's also just an enormous amount of work to get that much artwork up on a screen and to really sell it.
Mm. Throughout your career that includes Disney, tell us about mentors that you had along the way that helped you navigate the whole art and science that you were in as an artist.
Oh boy. Well, it takes two different paths. I mean, as a student of art in college, I was always a great admiration for people like Andrew Wyeth, some fine artists that really appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember he inspired me so much to do watercolors, and I think that's really one of the first things I started doing. You know, at a very young age, I was entering contests and things as young as 15, 16 years old.
Mm.
And Andrew Wyeth is probably just one of them, but you know, N.C. Wyeth, who was his dad, was a tremendous illustrator. Howard Pyle also was a great illustrator that I admired a lot. He taught N.C. Wyeth actually. And it goes back to just a lot of the early illustrators that I admired as a kid. It's funny because I didn't really think of animation as a career when I was in art school. I wanted to be an illustrator more than I wanted to be just a fine artist because I wanted to make a living as an artist. And I've been able to combine both, luckily. But I think that the thing that really got me into Disney was I had a teacher, Roy Alexander was his name, and he used to do some of the movie posters for the studio. So he was one of my instructors at Art Center. And one night, one day in class, he invited us to go down to the studio. And I'd never been to Disney Studios. You know, I've lived all around it, but I never actually went to the studio here in Burbank. And he invited the class down to see a pencil test, which is just the initial animation test in pencil in one of the small theaters in the animation building. So I was the last one to show up because I had forgotten all about the class meeting at the studio. So I got there last, and one of the security guards had actually walked me in to see the screening. I was going to just not go at all, but I thought, well, I better go because it's, you know, I might not get a good grade if I don't go. So he walked me in, and they were already in the small theater, a screening theater, which holds about 50 people, I guess, in the animation building. So I joined the class, and I was sitting there watching that. And I remember sitting with my friend, Jeff Richards. He was another student friend of mine. And after the screening, we just started walking down the main hall of the studio. And on each side of the hallway were original Disney paintings from the different movies, all in gouache, so all the way from Pinocchio and Snow White, Lady and the Tramp. I remember all these things vividly, just looking at these paintings going, oh my goodness, you know, I would love to do something like this. And to that point, I'd never even thought about it, you know, and I got so excited about it. I asked my instructor, says, who do I talk to get into this line of work? Because I thought it was right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, well, you know, here's Ed Hansen. He's the one that's giving the tour. Ask Ed how to approach it. So I asked him, I said, Ed, you know, how do I get into something like this? And he said, well, stay in school and don't worry about it. And just show us your portfolio when you get out of school. And I persisted. And I said, well, is it possible to show my work before that just to get an idea if I'm going in the right direction with my artwork?
So smart.
And he said, well, hesitantly, he goes, well, okay, why don't you just drop it by the guard gate tomorrow and we'll take a look at it. So I thought, oh, great, this is fantastic. So the next day I drove down and dropped off my portfolio at the guard gate and drove back to school. And I think it was the next day or might have been the day after that. I can't remember. It was a day or two after that, I get this call from the studio wanting to hire me full time. So I thought, oh my goodness, I'm in school and I'm getting a job offer already from Disney. So I asked them if I could finish out that semester, and they said, well, as long as you promise to start, you know, right after the semester's over with, we'll do that. So that's exactly what happened. So I finished out the semester. I went to Disney Studios. My mentor at Disney Studios was a fellow named Don Bluth.
Don Bluth?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So Don was significant in hiring me, you know, and he put me in a room right next to him with the animators.
Gosh.
So I was surrounded by the nine old men and Don Bluth, and Don Hahn was his assistant, and all of these tremendous artists who I didn't even know who they were at that time. I didn't realize that here's the most famous illustrators and animators.
In all the world.
You know, I'm sitting right in my own office right next to Don Bluth. So he was my mentor. So every day, Don and all these other animators would come in to see how I was doing. And they would just say, go pick out some layouts or drawings from the archives and start painting, and so we can see how you do. So that's what I did. I would pick out drawings from the archives, and I'd bring back to my office, and I would just start painting these things. And I'd have to pin them up on this bulletin board, and then every week they would take them up to the producers and directors, and they would approve me for another week. And this went on for about 3 months, where they said, okay, you're finally a Disney artist, you know, and they hired me. So I was hired full-time. From the very beginning, I was hired full-time, but they actually said, okay, you're considered a full-time Disney artist now. So that's how it all initiated, and that's what got me into animation. Up until that point, I'd never even thought about it until I walked down the hallway and saw those incredible paintings.
And you just asked that question. I know the situation's changed today a lot for young artists, but the big lesson there, folks, is that it starts with gumption and initiative. So that's incredible.
It does. I mean, I was a little bit persistent, and I've kind of always been that way. I'm not afraid to ask questions and do things like that. So, but that was a turning point in my whole career. It was just, you know, asking Ed if I could just drop off a portfolio, and then all of a sudden I had no idea it would end up in Don Bluth's office, and he would hire me the next day.
That's brilliant. Okay. So Michael, we've reached more than the halfway point of today's show, and let's do a commercial for you. Tell our listening audience where they can go to look at your entire portfolio and gallery and purchase the works of the one and only Michael Humphreys.
Well, you can go to my, I think you mentioned this earlier. My website is michaelhumphreys.net. And, it's just spelled out as simple as that, michaelhumphreys.net. And I have it divided into different categories. I have artwork, more fine artwork that's more for calendars and print work outside of Disney. But I also have a section for Disney fine art, which is a lot of the artwork I still do for Disney Studios for prints. And also they sell the original artworks, opinions as well. There's different galleries. That sell, you just have to look for, I think there's a link on my website. You can go to Disney Fine Art and find out different locations and things of that nature if you want to buy prints of my Disney work. But also have different categories. I have illustration category, film category, visual development category, which is also for film. So I've done so many different things. And I've illustrated a lot for toy companies. I've illustrated a lot for just a variety of different subject matter, theme park things. So just take a look at that, the whole thing. And you can buy also prints of mine through Fine Art America, which you can buy through my website. Also, Imed just connects to Fine Art America, and they sell all my print work besides Disney Fine Art. So there's two different places you can go for there. I don't normally sell a lot of original work off my website. It's available. You have to inquire about it, but then I can give you prices and things of that if you're interested in buying original artwork. Other than that, the print work either goes through Disney Fine Art or Fine Art America, or through my website, which also is Fine Art.
Perfect. Okay, so in our opinion, we believe you're one of the best of the best of all times. What have you considered or been asked to do a master class to teach others so you can go viral?
I have actually. I've been asked several times to do my own kind of classes online. Mm-hmm. But I've been teaching so much through the Art Center College of Design here in Pasadena. So it's like this is my last week for the summer term, but then the fall term starts in a few weeks. And I have five classes. Each class is 5 hours long.
Good grief.
So it's
you're too busy.
It's a heavy schedule.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't really have the time outside of that because I'm doing work for Disney. I'm doing freelance work. Just finished working on a television series for a company as well. It just takes up a lot of my time, so I haven't really had the opportunity to set up my own master class online because the college keeping me so busy.
Well, at some stage, if that bandwidth improves, maybe you can do that so the rest of the world can get a glimpse at how you teach. I think that just as a side note, I think your teaching is a great legacy move for you to create the next junior Michael Humphreys.
Yeah. Well, it has been great for me as well. It's a whole different discipline than working on film, but it's also when you get the right students and you get the right I should say group of students actually, and they're all excited about learning. Then I get excited about that as well. You see right behind me, you see there's a camera. It's a downshooting camera on my drawing board there. So I taught a gouache class last term, so I can teach traditional work and zoom in on my work and show you how to do that as well as. But most of the work I teach for the colleges at Photoshop because they need to know how to work digitally in the film industry. There's not a lot of work in the film industry, at least for animation, that is traditional anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Studios want digital artwork because it's easy to store, it's easy to share, saves them an incredible amount of time and money. The downside on that is that they're losing the original artwork that we created for the other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Princess and the Frog was an all-digital movie, so when I painted backgrounds on that movie, it was all in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Prior to that, all the movies, I think, were painted traditionally. And they have great archives at Disney where they keep all of that original artwork, which is priceless, and you can't see that anymore unless they print it in books and things. I do have a book that I've written, which was supposed to come out a couple of years ago, but it's still in the process of being approved through my publisher. Not my publisher, but my publisher is trying to get all the approval through Disney now because Disney has to approve every single image, which is about 70 Disney images from the movies.
Goodness.
And that's called Visual Storytelling with Color and Light. It can be pre-ordered on Amazon. I don't know exactly the release date because it's been held up so much from that. But.
Visual Storytelling with Color and Light. Yeah. That's great.
That if you can get the book, and it's also going to be a digital book as well.
Okay.
Eventually, whenever it comes out. But that I tell so much about. I really wrote it as a textbook, actually, for my students. So it has a lot of information on how we created the background work. All about the animation industry. I talk a lot about as I said, probably 70 paintings from Disney movies I have in the book. Not that I painted. I have a lot of mine as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I have mine some of the work from many, many different artists going all the way back to Snow White. And I kind of talk about how they were created and why they were created and the process. So there's a lot of step-by-step things in there as well on how I approach painting, how I create the atmosphere, the mood, all of this sort of thing. I do it. I have demos in the book traditionally in gouache, acrylic, and also digitally in Photoshop. So you can see in all these different mediums how I approach the paintings.
Maybe that is the master class, Michael. That's just...
It is the master class if the book would just get released.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So long. I mean, I finished my part of the book 3 years ago, but I it's been through this. It has to go through so much approval processes at Disney Studios. Even every painting I do for Disney now, like the I just finished the one... they send the haunted house at Disney World, and even that's in the approval process now. So they have to go through so many different channels to get approval before they can actually their own company can actually print it.
Mm. It's amazing. Do you have let's call it 5 more minutes to answer 3 legend questions?
Of course, certainly.
That'd be great. We better catch you before you get back in school and start teaching those 5 classes again, because. It's like your
class today. My first class for this week is tomorrow.
Very good. Okay, so when you and I met first, I think we talked about Huntington Gardens, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a Huntington Library and Gardens here in Pasadena.
Yes.
It's actually, San Marino is actually right next to Pasadena.
So that inside that, Michael, is a question of. For our art community that listens to this show, how does a particular location inspire your creativity or imagination?
The first thing that I'm inspired by is the lighting, not even the subject matter so much.
Okay.
For 10 years of my teaching career, I would take the students out, actually not to Huntington Library, but to Descanso Gardens, which is here in... close by to where I am in Pasadena.
Okay.
But what I would always focus on, because I would do a demonstration painting in the beginning of the class and the students would be behind me watching. And I would always talk about the lighting first, because that's the thing that really creates the focus and the magic of the scene. Mm. It's not so much, I mean, it could be something as simple as a tree and rose bushes or something like that. The subject matter is kind of immaterial in a lot of ways, but I always get excited by the light. And that's the thing I would focus on, is just to really focus on understanding light, understanding how light works, understanding, because that creates the atmosphere, can also create the focal point of what you want to paint.
Mm-hmm.
A specific tree and had a really great sense of light onto it. Morning light is really good. Late afternoon light is probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
Overhead lighting, direct lights during the day. Like overhead is probably the most boring because it's kind of straight down. So I just like for special times of day also to go out and paint. But most of my classes were in the morning, and there's always some interesting lighting in the morning light. And late afternoon I suggest as well. You know, and color is sort of subjective in a lot of ways. I tend to think the better way to start out, instead of using a lot of color, is to use color that is more monochromatic, with less color, and then kind of test the waters a little bit. I think some of the students tend to use too much color in the beginning. If you're not really understanding color that well and understanding how to use color, limit your palette to maybe 3 colors. And keep it more of a monochromatic color scheme. It's like the one, I don't know if you can see it behind me, in the green. That's it's a painting that painting was just at the San Diego Museum of Art International Show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how monochromatic it is. It's almost all in greens. And the one next to it in the snow scene is almost all in blues. So I keep the colors limited a lot of the time. I don't know if you're able to share screen. I could show you. No, that might be too much to do right now.
It's okay.
Yeah, just limit the color, you know, in the beginning, and try and just create a mood with less color. And I think your paintings will be more successful in the beginning.
Very good. That really is a nice bridge to our final question of the day, and it's about success. Has your definition of success changed over the last 2 or 3 years, and has COVID-19 even influenced how you would define success?
Well, it certainly changed the way I teach the COVID thing, because it's been all in the classroom until, and I had to learn how to paint via Zoom very, very quickly. We had like 2 weeks to transition from the classroom to Zoom and do digital paintings. But I can share the screen with the students, so the students can upload their artwork, and I can work right on their paintings digitally. Mm-hmm. So that's a really positive thing for teaching. In terms of success overall, it hasn't changed for me really at all. To me, success is just being able to do what I like to do and creating art all day long and making a living at it for the last 50 years.
Hmm.
I'm not trying to be Thomas Kincaid where I have to get out there and sell thousands and thousands of prints to be successful. I'm happy just to be able to paint, still paint for Disney, still paint fine art stuff. I'm still doing calendars, which gets me into more of a country kind of fine art.
Sure.
Subject matter. So success to me is just whenever you can make a living doing what you want to do and not ever get bored with it. That's success. You know, it's not the money just happens to come with success. You know, so if I can still make a living doing it, I'm perfectly happy doing it.
That's rock solid advice. Okay, I'm gonna throw in one more. I can't help myself. I'd love for you to speak to all the elementary students across the United States, maybe the world, and give them a bit of encouragement about becoming artists. And this comes from my heart. I had an art teacher named Mrs. Helvey in the first through the sixth grade. And in the first grade, Michael, she asked, "How many of you are artists?" And all 30 of us raised our hand. By the sixth grade, she asked that question. 2 of the 30 of us said, "We're still artists." So to that end, you know where I'm going with this. Give an encouraging word from you as one of our favorite artists in the world about sticking with it and having the courage to call yourself and to be an artist.
Being an artist is really about being inspired about what you see. You know, previously I was talking about the lighting inspiring me, and whatever, you know, nature can inspire you, you know, television cartoons can inspire you. There's so many things that you can be attracted to that that can motivate a career in art. It's all about visual storytelling. Mm. It's, you know, if you wanted to be a children's book artist, if you wanted to be a work in television animation, if you wanted to be a fine artist and sell your work in galleries, there's just so many avenues that you can take. But the thing that you have to be able to do is to be inspired. You have to have that inspiration to keep you motivated. If you're motivated to continue doing what you're to drawing or painting or exploring different mediums, whether it's sculpting or painting or drawing or whatever it is, it's the inspiration that has to be there first and the passion. Without the passion, it probably will dwindle. You can always be, you don't have to be a professional artist necessarily to be an artist. You can just be an artist for your own enjoyment. And, there's a lot of millions of people that just love to paint or love to draw that just do it for their own, motivations. But, I've always wanted to be a professional artist. I've always wanted to make a living as an artist, and I've always been inspired by painting. I've always been inspired to be creative and motivated to continue. I get really bored when I'm not painting. And so I find even if I don't have to paint, I'll still start working on a painting.
Yeah.
You know, but it's that motivation that has to be there first. So if you're passionate about it, you will succeed, period. If you're not passionate about it, I see my students nowadays, I go through this, that are paying an awful lot of money to go to this college that I teach at. And I see some that are highly motivated, and I can tell in their artwork at first glance if they're going to be successful or not.
Mm.
A lot of it has to do with, you know, I think some of the parents may be more. Oh, excuse me.
No problem.
Let me just turn this off.
You see it automatically on the ones that you know are going to make it.
I do, because I can see the passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can see the passion in the artwork. I can see that they're inspired. They're motivated to do really great work. And they do more work than I ask for oftentimes. It's the ones that are always late with the assignments, or, you know, can't really understand what I'm talking about in the assignments, or have one excuse after the other that I know will probably not end up as successful as they would like to be.
You got it.
And so if you're motivated and you have the inspiration to be creative, and you know, it could be color, it can be drawing, it can be anything. But you have to have that first, I think, more than anything else.
Very good. Michael, thank you so much for being on our Legends show. And you know that we are great fans of your work. Tell our listening audience one more time how they can see your gallery.
It's michaelhumphries.net. Humphries is H-U-M-P-H-R-I-E-S. michaelhumphries.net. And you can see my website. And I'm also on Instagram. You can just look me up, Michael Humphries Art, on Instagram. And on Instagram, I post a lot of the artwork, demo paintings that I've done for my classes. Mm. And they're usually smaller paintings.
Yep.
I've got three drawers full of the paintings right behind me. And, each painting would take about an hour and a half at the most, and all on location. And you can see all those little paintings on Instagram, which you won't see probably on there. You might see some of them on the website too, but mostly on Instagram.
Very good. Thank you, sir, for being on. Again, keep up the great work and the imagination and the creativity. And thank you for your encouraging word to elementary students across the nation. That
absolutely,
that really means a lot. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And join us again next week, folks, for another Legend show. And in the interim, as we always say, may you move your life from ordinary to extraordinary. Have a great week.
Great advice. Thank you.